You are about to enter a great adventure.
This is Starting from Gorilla.
Welcome back, guys, to another episode of Starting from Gorilla. I'm Mikey Cash. He is Big Vito. You can see the ticker at the bottom of the screen. Use that to find us on all the social media gimmicks. We really appreciate it. Keep watching, keep listening, keep subscribing. Tell all your jabroni friends about this award-winning podcast that's never won any awards. We're really excited to be back with you here today as we review WWE Backlash. It came in live from France over the weekend, and it was a whirlwind for the Gorilla crew here, but we have made it. Our schedules have aligned. We are here to record our review of it. Vito, it's good to have you back in the chair, man. How you doing?
Ooh la la. Ooh la la. It was a hell of a weekend, Mikey Cash. I got to tell you, though.
Yeah,
I have a hard time, and I feel like you're like this too, right? We have crazy schedules, and like we're really popular and cool, so we have crazy schedules over here at Strutting from Gorilla. I'm a man of continuity. I need to have like structure, and these crazy Saturday afternoon pay-per-views, and as much as I love them going to France and like Puerto Rico and all these different places, it's really challenging because it's like I'm doing stuff in the middle of a Saturday. Like, it's hard to watch it. And what's great about Peacock is you can go back. The problem is, like, God forbid I open up my phone for 1 minute, I see every spoiler imaginable, you know, through the Twitter machine, or the X machine now, I guess you would call it. So that's my only gripe. So I just want to get that negative out of the way. I get why they do it. They have to kind of do it that way. But I almost need, like, when we download, when the Patriots or the NFL or any sports team now, they have a calendar document that you, like, download and I put it in my phone. I need that for the pay-per-views because I get really confused. And I'm a simple man. I get very confused.
Well, I agree with you, Vito. You are a simple man. And simple. I also agree that the pay-per-view schedule is a little bit wonky. I think because they're clearly trying to make an effort to capitalize on what I think all of us at one point were asking for, which is, can you not have it on a Sunday night?
Yeah.
So I think in that vein, they've been trying and with some success, I would say. I think now it's be careful what you wish for because now you're getting it. And now we're getting it and we're like, well, I don't know. I'm busy on a Saturday. It's like, yeah, I get it. But, you know.
Well, I guess we just feel the pain that all the other countries feel when it's on a Sunday night and people are watching at 1 a.m. So, all right, I'm off my soapbox. I just want to put that out. That's all. I gotta have one thing to complain about. I can't just be Jovial Vito over here all the time now.
This show would be unrecognizable if we're just happy all the time.
Right. It doesn't make any sense. But no, I do got to give props to the crowd in France. And you know what? Realistically, shame on the U.S. because we don't give them half the energy that some of these international crowds have given these pay-per-views. I mean, Puerto Rico, and I guess that's really not international, but close enough.
Technically.
Yeah. But all these crowds have been off the charts, man. And it very much reminded me of the Attitude Era. That was good stuff. And you know what? I would love to have been in one of those crowds because it's contagious, right? You go to the show like that and you want to be excited and it's different. Like I experienced that twice. Once when I was at WrestleMania 14, okay? And the second time was when I went to Raw probably, what was it? Like about a year ago. The one that I wasn't able to get tickets for you, Mikey, and I'm sorry about, but that was the one, and it was like that type of feeling. It was good. That's a great live experience, and it's even better for the wrestlers, and then it all translates and comes full circle because you get this amazing show.
Well, one, thanks for rubbing salt in that wound.
I said I'm sorry.
Two, I'm right there with you. I think the crowds on these overseas shows have been phenomenal, man. It's just, it's next level kind of stuff. When I was actually just texting a friend of mine about this, you look at all the different wrestling towns across the US, you think Chicago, you think Boston, you think Madison Square Garden. There's probably others that I'm leaving off the list, but just for those as an example, those are always big wrestling towns. When you go there, you know the crowd's going to be hot. You and I were both fortunate enough to be in Brooklyn during that NXT show. That crowd was absolutely phenomenal for.
That's true. That was a good one too.
This crowd and these overseas crowds are putting that to absolute shame. It's making it look like we're just sitting on our hands. So I don't know if that's going to have an effect, as if crowds are going to start trying to one-up each other in how involved can we get. But I'm excited because you felt the energy the whole time. That crowd was into it from the moment that show started till the very end of the show. It was really cool. It was really cool. And you yourself feel that excitement. And so then you're kind of responding almost in the same way, because you're like, oh, this is really good. I'm really enjoying it. And as a show overall, Backlash really did not disappoint. There was only 5 matches on the card, which you and I have talked about as fantastic. Let's not overload it. Each match got time. I thought it was a really solid overall show. What about you?
Yeah, I thought it was pretty good. You know, I think it was what we kind of expected. I got more of a feel. There was a lot of wrestling in this show, like good wrestling, which you don't see WWE do that very often anymore.
Yeah.
You know what I'm trying to say? And I thought it was a good overall show. But again, I think when the crowd brings that energy, you're going to get a better show. Yeah. What did you think, Cash?
Well, one thing that I noticed off the bat was there was not, I don't recall there being any promos. Was there any? Maybe like one or
that's
two?
That's my point. Little thing? Like,
It was match, video package, match, video package, match. It just kept, that was the structure of the whole night. I kind of thought that was an interesting departure from what we've seen them do in the past. So whatever they were trying out, I kind of dug it. I mean, maybe every show's going to feel a little bit different. This one was more focused on the action in the ring. We're just going to focus on the stories that are being told. We're not adding anything extra. We've already told all of that story in the TV leading up to this event. And so now we're just going to let it play out.
Yeah, I think that was interesting. I also think, and we've talked about this before, but the production has been just different. Like the fact that they have the smaller entranceways to fit more fans. They don't have the big Titantron. I mean, they had a big screen, but it's not a production that they would normally put on. I think that's kind of a shift away from what they've done in the past. Mm-hmm. And I like it because you're fitting more fans in there, right? And if they have the ability to do that, why not? And I personally enjoyed it. It's a shift away from what they've done, and they've been on a good shift, and I like what they're doing. I even really enjoy, and they may have copied this from AEW, but the after press conference after, I've said this before, I really like it. It's a cool thing for them to do. And what I like about Triple H coming on at the end is he's pretty honest about the answers. He doesn't really, I mean, he's politically correct. He doesn't necessarily give you everything, but he answers questions. Like, you know, it's not like he tries to swage you in some direction. He answers them honestly. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a breath of fresh air, to be honest.
Agreed.
And I think you can see it with the talent. You know, you can see how they enjoy this more. You know, they get to do what they love to do. It seems like they're getting more input. I mean, I just overall thought it was a good pay-per-view. And again, we say this a lot. 5 matches, fantastic. You know, like, let them focus on the what they got going on at hand and not trying to focus on having enough time to fit everyone on the pay-per-view.
Right. Sorry to interrupt. It's really good about pacing. I think you're starting to see just how important that is to the way Triple H runs the shows. He wants it paced. He doesn't want the crowd to be exhausted by the end of the show. He kind of wants them to sort of have the up, the down, and give them that time to sort of recalibrate before the next match. But when there's not a lot of matches, it's easier to do that than if you had like 12 matches.
Yeah, and I also think it's probably easier for them when they go over to overseas. They don't have to bring the full roster, right?
Right.
So that's also pretty cool in itself.
Yeah, yeah. I'm with you. So we've been gushing about this. Let's go through this match by match, man. There's only five, so I think it's easy for us to do it. Let's dive right in. The show kicked off with a bang. We had Solo Tama Tonga versus Randy Orton and Kevin Owens. What did you think of this? I felt like this was kind of up your alley, the way this went, it devolved into an ECW like street fight.
Yeah, it was a hard hitting match, man. You know, one thing I will say, I'm not super sold on Solo as this, like, I think I get what they're trying to do in the evolution of the storyline. Mm-hmm. But it's clearly evident that Roman Reigns is just a big star, right?
Right.
Solo doesn't really have that big star effect to me. Admit, hey, listen, I'll give him time. I mean, whatever it is, what it is. But I thought this match was good. It was very hard hitting. It was very Kevin Owens-esque. It, you know, obviously they started out and it was just this mad brawl. Nick Aldis came out, right? It's Nick Aldis. Nick Aldis came out and turned it into a street fight, basically. They went out into the crowd. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite parts was when Randy Orton, he got on the barricade and acted like he was going to jump off. And then he was like, nah, I'm not doing that.
It was pretty awesome. He was just like, I'm good. I'm all right.
Yeah. But what I like about it is, you know, with Kevin Owens, he's such an interesting guy, right? Like I think for his entire career, I've been trying to figure him out. And if you look back in his days before WWE, he did a lot of hardcore stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, he could have been a great ECW wrestler. Like he used to do the buckle bomb, and then they stopped it. I mean, that thing was vicious. I mean, if you go back and look at some clips, it was pretty vicious. But you know, you put him in a match like that, and I feel like that's where he shines. And not that he's a bad wrestler. I always liked Kevin Owens, but I think for his, like when he was champion, it was always challenging to look at him and say, okay, what makes this guy different? You know, and you know, he's a big guy. He'd do some stuff off the top rope, and he came on the scene pretty quick with Cena. But I think that's just where he shines. So like it worked out great. And then he was using kind of the old throwback to Stone Cold where he's stunning the security guards before the match. Mm-hmm. So it was good. I'm not sure I loved the ending. If there was one thing I would say that was negative about this, I hate when a match ends like that. But obviously they had to bring in the newest member of the Bloodline, and he missed his spot. If you really go back and watch, he didn't really get to the ref in time. It was close enough, but if you really watched it and look at the clips online, you can see he kind of missed it a little bit. But I also, and last thing, I know I'm kind of rambling on about this, but, and then I'll get your opinion, but, it was interesting. They kept going under the ring to grab like, all the weapons. And I just want to know when he went under the ring. Was he there from the beginning of the show? You know, like, I don't know. I always wonder that.
I always wonder if they have like a little cot under there and they're just lying down, just falling asleep. It's like one of those things. It's going to be like that story with Big Boss Man, who's supposed to have like a big spot and he fell asleep and he ended up missing out on like a whole story with Stone Cold back in the day. But I digress. So I have to say, I did enjoy this match. I thought it was a good way to hype up the crowd. I mean, they were already, not that they needed any hyping, but I thought this is really fun to start it off because everything else afterwards was kind of straightforward. So this was the way to have like this big chaotic match that took you all over the building. I thought, like you said, I think Solo is developing. Then he has gone from the silent assassin to now being thrust into what people are like maybe assuming is he the tribal chief? Is he sort of next in line, as Roman has even said on TV before? So is he kind of taking that to heart? And because Roman's gone, he's trying to step in and run things. I find myself, from a story standpoint, looking at this a little differently. I think Solo is following orders from somebody. And you can tell the way Heyman's reacting. He looks like a guy who's lost control of the ship. So the question, I think, on people's minds when you're coming out of this with the introduction of Tonga Loa, who is Tama Tonga's brother and both the sons of Haku / Ming, I think you're finding yourself wondering who is the puppet master here? Who is really the tribal chief? We all probably have a theory in mind, and it's probably very obvious. It's likely a boss of some kind, a final boss of some kind, who's really pulling the strings here. But I like that we're just getting little pieces of that. I don't want this to be done right away. I want this to like drag on. And I know people have a hard time with it in today's wrestling landscape. You want things sort of answered right away. We don't like uncertainty, but I'm enjoying it. So I enjoyed the match more so for the way it kind of drives the story now. And what does it look like with Tonga Loa, Tonga, and Solo as part of this new bloodline? And will there be any other members? You know, will they add a female member? Nia Jax is on SmackDown. Will that be something that they incorporate? That's an evolution of the bloodline they've yet to really dive into. So I don't know. I'm looking forward to it. But those are my thoughts on this match. And that I loved the karaoke that the crowd sang for Orton's song. I've never heard that before, so that was new.
I wouldn't know all the words. I was actually impressed they all knew the words. There's pieces of it I know, but...
Yeah, I didn't know any of it. All right, let's move on here. So the next match was the Women's Championship match. That was Bayley versus Naomi versus Tiffany Stratton. Vito, going to you. What'd you think?
Yeah, I thought it was a good match. I'm glad Bayley won. I thought it was what it needed to be. I still think Tiffany Stratton is fantastic. And kudos to you. You've been talking about her for a while, Cash, before she even came on the scene. But I think she's taken an opportunity from when Charlotte Flair got injured and really has kind of run with it. I don't think it was her time to win it. And I don't think it was Bayley's time to lose it. But I thought it was a good match. I mean, that's about where I can leave it off at. What were your thoughts?
Well, I'm with you in that this was a strong showing for Tiffany. I think it was her first time in a big money match at a pay-per-view or PLE. Sorry. I think this was also another example of what we've mentioned before regarding Bayley, that this is just her being able to live up to the reputation of making some of these other stars. And I think this was no exception. I think she made Tiffany look really good. I think she also made Naomi look really good. I think Tiffany overall handled the moment well. I think it wasn't going to be perfect. And you could see that there were some timing issues there, like a little bit of miscues, but that's going to happen. I think that's just that you're in a big moment. You're not going to handle it perfectly. The hope is you'll learn as you keep going and you get more comfortable in those spots and more comfortable in yourself and your ability. Something that struck me as I was watching that match is actually about Naomi. And there's just something so different about her since she came back from TNA. I think that was probably one of the best things she ever could have done because there is a different kind of vibe to her. She really is a veteran now. She's really someone who is more confident in herself as a performer and in her character. And that's conveyed in how she presents herself to the crowd. And they love her. So I just think it's awesome. I love when a performer's out there and like really comfortable and you can tell. And really, for the most part, all three of them are incredibly comfortable in where they are right now as what their portrayals are on TV. So I think the right person won. And you know, we'll just see where things go for Bailey. And yeah, it was a great match. I really loved it. I wish I had more like articulate or more things to articulate about it, but I just thought it was a good match. Solid triple threat match.
Yeah, the only thing negative I would say, and this is just an overall opinion, is and this might be controversial, and that's mm-hmm. completely fine, but you know, I like Naomi. Mm-hmm. I just don't know that she's at the level of Bayley and a Tiffany Stratton. I don't know how to explain it to you, but that's kind of what I get. I'm not saying she's bad. Don't misconstrue what I'm saying. I just, there's a difference when you watch a Naomi match and like a Bianca Belair or Becky Lynch. I mean, there's just a distinguishable difference when you watch them and the levels of wrestling. I'm not saying it's bad. It's just different. And, you know, I think when she left with Sasha and they wanted that push and they weren't getting it, I'm just not sure she's at the level of Sasha. Like, I that's just my personal opinion in the ring, even on the mic. But I don't think she's bad. I just wanted to point that out. And I think you can see with Tiffany Stratton, she's got more runway with her wrestling ability at this point. That's all I would say.
I think I would agree with you to an extent. I wouldn't say she's like top of the division, but I think her doing what she did has allowed her to sort of be up there in that main event scene. And agreed. I think that's what I enjoy about it is, yeah, not everyone is going to be the top of the top, but you're going to have people that you need people that can hang in the upper echelon, and she can do that.
Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah. So, all right, let's keep going here. Next up is our World Heavyweight Championship match. Damian Priest versus main event Jey Uso. Yeet. That's all I can say about it.
Yeah. I mean, I thought it was fine. I personally like Jey Uso as a solo wrestler. I think he's doing a great job. It like kind of reminds me of, and it's a little bit different because you have two twins, right? And they look alike, but it kind of reminds me of like Marty Jannetty and Shawn Michaels, right? Shawn Michaels was great in the tag team. And then obviously, you know what he did in his solo career, right? And that's what you remember him for. But the Usos were such a great tag team. To me, I think Jay does a far better job as a singles wrestler than Jimmy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's clearly evident when you watch the two of them wrestle. Like the match at WrestleMania, Jay, I thought, was great. Jimmy, I'm not so sure, you know, but it's hard to tell because they're twins. Like they're so similar. But I feel a difference when you watch them. And I'm glad he's having the singles chance. And I think he's going to do really well. I thought this match was fine. To me, it was probably the least exciting of the matches, in my opinion. And Damian Priest, I'm fine with him being champion. I just am not sold on him. I don't know how to describe it to you. I got no problem with the guy, but he did some cool moves. Like those corkscrew kicks were pretty cool.
Big time.
And he's a big athletic dude and he's come a long way. I love that he does the razor's edge. And I think we compared him to Scott Hall a long time ago in like that same kind of style. Yeah. But that's about where I could say, I thought it was fine. I mean, lots of title defenses here and lots of title, I don't think any titles change hands. So
no,
actually one was, did. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. One
it's
did.
The match yep. after, yeah. but we'll get
yeah.
to that.
Yeah.
I'm with you right now. I think they're just trying to establish Damian as a champion. And I feel like that's always the challenge whenever you have somebody win it via cash in of Money in the Bank. And it wasn't like a one-on-one match where you kind of have a story build up. So I think they're sort of creating it retroactively. He's carrying the history of Judgment Day and that story, which is what I think kind of overshadowed the match itself. So that's why I don't have too much about the match. I thought it was fine. And I'm kind of with you where it's like a spoil of riches because every match was so good. It's like, all right, well, this was like maybe the one I was least invested in, but the story behind it, I find myself invested in. And that story of what's going to be happening with the Judgment Day, there are so many cracks in that armor right now. You got Dom kind of doing whatever he's doing with Liv. I don't know if you saw Raw last week, but there was an interview going on, and behind you saw Liv leave a room, and then Dom came out from the same room like a couple seconds later. So you have that. You got JD McDonagh and Finn Balor that are getting overly involved in Damian's matches, and he wants to do things, you know, the right way. So he's kind of turning face. So I can feel it coming, and I think everybody can, and that's the point. But they're definitely headed towards Finn versus Damian in my eyes. And sure. I think that will be a really good test for Damian. You're going up against a guy who is a former champion. He's the first Universal champion. You know, we could argue about like what Vince did to his run at the top or his attempted run at the top, but now Triple H is in charge and he's a big Finn guy, and Finn has been prominent and he's been showcased very well in my eyes. So I think it'll be a good rivalry once it really takes off. And from what I saw on Raw last night, it's already headed in that direction in my eyes. But I wouldn't be surprised. So this match, again, really more served to just further the story than it was about the match itself. But I thought it was good overall.
So. Nope, I agree. And then next we had the Women's Tag Team Championship match.
Kabuki Warriors versus Bianca Belair and Jade Cargill. Dude, Jade feels like a star, man. She really does. They have presented her so well. They got the rocket. They strapped the rocket to her.
Yeah, and rightfully so. I mean, she's a force, right? You look at her, and I think our biggest concern was, can she actually wrestle? Because we never saw her wrestle. And she's doing a good job. She's doing a good job. I think teaming her with Belair is a perfect matchup. I also think, you know, obviously they won the tag team titles, spoiler alert. And I think that puts, you know, the women's tag team titles, it's hard with the men's tag team titles sometimes, right? Like to give them relevance. And I think having them as the tag champions does give a little bit of boost and kind of pushes people. I mean, they're a hell of a force to be reckoned with, two of the strongest women in WWE, like, and most athletic, to say the least. So, I thought it was good. I mean, I feel a little bit bad for the Kabuki Warriors. You know, Asuka has she used to be this dominant force, and I feel like she's kind of fell from that a little bit. But I thought it was a good match, and I thought it was a good way to boost those tag team titles.
I'm with you. I think this is a good start for Jade and Bianca's story together, because I believe that at some point we are headed towards the collision of the two. And
oh, definitely.
And on SmackDown the night before, we saw, I think, the start of that. And it's been going on with Bianca for a little while. They are planting little seeds. She's got this obsession with damage control and everything that they did to her, and she can't let it go. And I think that is slowly going to creep into her character a little bit more. We're going to get little bits and pieces, but this is going to be long term. This is long game for them. They're going to have a good run in their tag title reign, I believe, because they're going to be able to hop around between Raw and SmackDown and NXT. They're going to be doing a lot. A lot of work with a lot of different talent. And I think that's going to be good for Jade, who I thought in this match in particular was protected really well. And being in a tag team, I think, is going to protect her for a while, because it allows her to develop, and the spotlight isn't solely on her. She has somebody who's experienced, who's main evented a WrestleMania like Bianca Belair, to help guide her along in her development. And so it's a really smart move. And then throughout that, it naturally creates a story where already you had Jade kind of holding Bianca back. on SmackDown during that segment where she just started getting all hyped up and is getting angry about the Kabuki Warriors and everything Damage Control has taken from her. So let's see how she responds now that she's taken something from Damage Control. Where does it end? And does this lead to her, you know, showing a little bit of a darker side to her character? I think it could be really cool. It could be a good story. So I'm looking forward to it.
Agreed. And then we have the main event here, which I thought was good. I mean, I think it's a match that could headline any pay-per-view. AJ Styles, I know I talked about Shawn Michaels already, but AJ Styles really, if you're going to look at somebody who, and I think Undertaker has compared him to Shawn Michaels too, but he kind of elevates the guy next to him in the ring. And I think it's a really good comparison. I mean, if you look at anybody on the roster right now, you could put him in any match and he can do that, right? And it turns into a good match. So I was excited about this one. What I really liked about this was the story about Dusty and AJ wrestling in 2003, and now it's 21 years later, and he's wrestling his son. And a really neat thing that I saw, if you go back and look at the footage from TNA, AJ has these shorts on, they're purple, he had his ring gear custom made to replicate those colors. I thought it was a really unique touch. That just says a lot. And what a cool story. You get to wrestle his son. I feel like at that time AJ was still new and Dusty probably helped put him over. I forget what happened in the match. I would assume AJ Styles won, but I don't know. Yeah, mm-hmm. I would assume he did. And now he gets the chance to kind of repay that favor to Cody, or to Dusty, to Cody. Mm-hmm. And I mean, not that Cody needed it or anything, but I just think it's a cool little intricacy that some people may not know about if you didn't know about TNA. So,
yeah, I thought this was a really great match. I liked kind of the build to this match because of that history that was there with AJ and Dusty. And this was a nice first defense for Cody. This was the guy to do it against. It was the kind of the modern day sort of Shawn Michaels-esque guy who can do it all and he can perform with anyone. And this was no different. That match delivered. It was a really good, that main event style match. They didn't go too crazy. And I feel like they're, WWE as a whole is doing a good job of really showcasing the different styles of wrestling in their match cards. And you can see, you know, there's going to be sort of the more harder hitting. There's going to be a bit of the more athletic, and they're going to be kind of doing, you know, the flippy floppy. And then you got people that are working like strong style, like the Kabuki Warriors. You work with them, they're going to beat the shit out of you. And then you have the main event style, which is what you got Cody and AJ doing. And they're really great examples of that in my eyes. I thought they had a really great back and forth. The crowd, obviously, as usual, as they were all night, was into it. It was one of the loudest woes I've seen in Cody's entrance history so far. I thought it was really fun. And the right guy won, obviously. This is just continuing to establish Cody as the new guy. And to keep using a term that's being overused now in wrestling, a new era in WWE.
Right. No, I completely agree with you. I thought it was great, and I'm excited to see, you know, what happens next here with Cody Rhodes. So, I don't know what else I could say about it. I if I were to sum up this pay-per-view or this premium live event, I would tell you that it was WWE's chance to show that they could wrestle. It wasn't just about the entertainment piece, right? And I think they did a really good job. I liked it, thought it was great all around. And that's pretty much how I would sum it up. And I'm excited to see how we continue and we move on. What is the next pay-per-view coming up? Is it the Saudi Arabia one?
Yeah, it's the King and Queen of the Ring. So that's gotcha. What that one's going to be. So they've already started the King of the Ring tournament, and it kind of feels like they've already begun their build for it. They're doing it kind of old school again, where they were having like a bracket for Raw and SmackDown, and there's going to be qualifying matches throughout. It's feeling like the King of the Ring of old again, which is kind of nice. So
good. Yeah, I think that'll be good.
I've always loved King of the Ring. I love a good tournament, and especially when you like build a show around it. That's kind of cool.
Yeah. Real quick, if I'm going to give you my predictions of who's going to win, I'll just tell you that one man before we end this episode here. I think Tiffany Stratton's going to win Queen of the Ring and King of the Ring. I am going to tell you it is going to be Bron Breakker.
Oh, Bron Breakker. That's a good one. I don't know who I think is going to win. I'm going to have to get back to this. I don't know if I have a good person yet of who.
Top of your head. You don't have
Drew
time.
McIntyre. I still think Drew McIntyre is going to somehow find his way into this.
Good one.
I love how miserable his character is.
Everything terrible happens
to this guy. Like he wasn't medically cleared to compete last night, so technically he's out of it. But I know he's going to find his way in. I know.
Sure. And what about the woman? You got to pick someone.
Oh, I'm with you. I think it's Tiffany. I think it's Tiffany time. There's no way. There's no way. Yeah. It could be anybody else. We might get surprised. But I think if it's not Tiffy, it might be a returning Charlotte Flair.
Oh, that's a good one, too. I don't know if she's ever been queen. Oh, I think she has one. No, never?
She hasn't. No? She's just they just call her the queen.
Yeah, that's true.
So it's kind of fitting.
Fair enough.
All right. Any other thoughts?
No, the only thing I would say is, you know, there's a documentary on Vice TV that The Rock produced that's coming out called Who Killed WCW? And my first thought of this is like, God, another WCW documentary. But I've heard that it's pretty good, and they actually get interviews from people that you haven't heard from before. So I'm kind of curious to see how that goes, and I'm definitely going to check it out. It's by the people who make Dark Side of the Ring, and then also 7 Bucks production, and The Rock had a big hand in it. So I'm curious to see how that goes. So I'm definitely gonna check it out. All right, I've heard it's pretty good.
Awesome. All right, I'll check it out too. All right, guys. Well, once again, thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. If you're listening on the podcast version of this, we really appreciate all of the support. Keep watching, keep listening, keep subscribing. Tell all your friends about us. And we will be back in 2 weeks to talk about the build
with Vinny Berry. Vinny Berry.
We got
Black Bart over here. Wrestle Black Bart by Vinny Berry here. And he's a big friend of the podcast. And we're just working on getting him back on here. We can talk to him a little bit about the book. And we're very excited about it, Mikey Cash. We love Vinny Berry. He always brings some great stuff to the podcast. So I just wanted to throw that out there before we sign off.
Absolutely. We love Vinny. We can't wait to get him on. So be on the lookout for that, guys. And until next time, keep on strutting, jabronis.